Blog Talk Radio.
Today's sponsor of Southern Sense is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audible entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Southern Sense.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud, American. American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room or grab your phones. Call in and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud, American. 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 American.
Happy, happy Friday. Welcome back to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, Pundit Press, Kinetic Hi-Fi, The Fix FM, Patriot Radio Network, TeaPartyCommunity.com, Ghost Fighter Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. All in one breath. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Annie, the radio chick, along with the daredevil, Dan, the butcher of Pundit Press, and Kel, the red foxy lady. Welcome aboard, Dan and Kel.
Hi, Annie. Hi, Dan.
Well, hello, everybody. It's wonderful to be. It's a great Friday. Hey, Annie, I want to send a shout out to a couple of guys real quick as we start the show. I've got a story up on Pundit Press, and I'm going to put a link into the chat room. And there's a couple of young men named Lucian Patton and Langoff. Both of these are young soldiers in the United States Army, and they have formed a musical group called Patton and Goff, and they have released a song called "Proud of Who I Am." And I'll put a link up so the listeners can go out and check out the video of these guys performing the song. This song is an amazing song, and it's America, and it shows America's raw patriotism at its best. And so this is one of these things that really needs to go viral, and the way these guys perform is amazing. So I'm going to put that up in the chat room for the listeners to go check out after the show today.
Fantastic, fantastic. Do you have the song that uploaded so you can play it or no?
I do not have it. I do not have it geared up where I can play it, where we could hear it properly. I mean, I could play it through my mic, but it would just, the sound quality would just be really lousy, and not do the vocals and the guitar work that these two guys do on this song justice. So, but I will put it in an audio format, so that if you want to play it on the song on the show sometime, I'll make sure that it's on an audio and MP3 so that you can do that, Annie.
Oh, all right. That sounds great. You got to pardon me. I had a cat sitting on the back of my chair here, and she just fell off.
Oh, no.
And you didn't catch it on video?
No, I'm back of my chair. I got eyes in the back of my head.
I can see it now. 100,000 hits on YouTube. Well, I've got a dog, as usual, snoring behind me. If he starts up, I'll mute myself. No worries.
Yes, pets do snore. I got one cat that loves to snore. Oh, man. The cacophony between her and my husband. It's amazing. Anyway, that's our nuts of stuff for today. I think Danny put it up. You put up the link to the show. All right, our guest today should be calling in about quarter after the hour. It's Warner Todd Houston, who is with Breitbart News. He also has his own blog called publisforum.com. He should be calling in about quarter after the hour, right? Anyway, we're going to start off with a dedication to a fallen hero, and let me get my head out of my butt. So I see what the heck I'm doing here. And this is from the Daily Coos. Today's dedication goes out to Sergeant First Class Matthew I. Leggett, who was killed August 20th, 2014, in Afghanistan. And let me bring up the Army mix on this one. All right. Daily Coos writes, the Department of Defense announced the death of a soldier who was supporting Operation Enduring Freedom. Sergeant First Class Matthew I. Leggett, 39, of Ruskin, Florida, died August 20th in Kabul, Afghanistan, of injuries received when he engaged by an enemy. He was assigned to Headquarters and Headquarters Battalion, the 18th Airborne Corps, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Sergeant First Class Matthew I. Leggett died after he was stabbed near the Kabul airport, Afghan police and government spokesman said. The incident occurred around 10:30. District police chief had said the assailant was arrested. He enlisted in the Army in May of 1995 and arrived at Fort Bragg in August 2012. He served 3 combat tours of duty, according to information released by the court. His awards and decorations include the Bronze Star with 1 oak leaf cluster, the Purple Heart, Defense Meritorious Service Medal, Meritorious Service Medal, Army Commendation Medal with 4 oak leaf clusters, the Afghan Campaign Medal with 1 campaign star, the Iraq Campaign Medal with 3 campaign stars, the Combat Action Badge, and the Basic Parachutist Badge. He is survived by his parents, Thea Marie Kurtz and Thomas Leggett. The Headquarters and Headquarters Battalion of the 18th Air Corps recently suffered a very tragic loss of a fellow Sky Dragon. We express our deepest condolences, said Lieutenant Colonel Gabriel Barton. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends during this difficult time. We will never forget him. Leggett was born in Wisconsin Rapids, said his cousin Jerry Leggett, formerly of Wisconsin and now Junction City. Matthew's father, Thomas Leggett, now of Texas, grew up in Nicosia and also had a career in the military, Jerry Leggett. Adding, Matthew has extended family in central Wisconsin. He'll be missed by his family and his friends. It appears that Sergeant First Class Leggett was stabbed in the neck at Kabul Airport. The airport is split in half for civilian and the other half for NATO, and he was serving with the NATO troops. We dedicate this show to Sergeant First Class Leggett. We dedicate it to all the brave men who have served, who are serving, and who will serve, And we dedicate it with the song by Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America. God bless you all.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt,
My Name is America, and you can download that song for free on his website, toddallenherndon.com. Well, Dan and Kel, we've got a great guest here that's waiting in on the line. We've got to welcome aboard Warner Todd Houston of Breitbart News. Good afternoon, Mr. Houston.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh,
welcome,
it is
Mr.
our
Houston.
Pleasure. And I think Dan fell asleep.
No, I'm here. I just didn't want to talk over both of you. I'm waiting my turn patiently. Well, it's great to have you on the show today, man.
Thanks.
All right, Warner, you've got yourself a really varied background, not only right for Breitbart Press, but in the past you've written for Right Wing News, Canadian Free Press, Stop the ACLU, Whiz Bang, CUNY Events, American Revenue. I'm sorry, American Daily Review. And Lord knows, I know I saw you up on Newsbusters, a couple of other places. Give us a little bit of a back about your background that brought you into doing this blog writing.
Well, back in the late 90s, a friend of mine and I used to write letters to the editors, you know, for at newspapers. And, of course, being conservatives, they hardly ever got in the newspaper. So there was we began to wonder what we could do to get our ideas out, you know, to a wider audience. And by 2001, of course, the Internet had really taken over the world, or was about to. And we started a blog together. And since then, 2001, just before the towers fell, is when I started writing. So I was kind of fortunate to get in this thing before everybody and their brother was. And I've written for all kinds of websites. I've also written for magazines and newspapers. And heck, I was even in Der Spiegel one time in Germany, which amused me to no end. And some of my pieces have ended up in textbooks for colleges, and it's just been crazy.
Wow. You know, it's funny because you say that the Internet took off in 2001. I remember when I went to college, I was learning the programming on key punch cards. So that dates me a little bit.
Right, right.
And if that you ever say dial-up modem, people go, what?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you were learning punch cards, that means you're 50 up, something up.
This lady is not afraid to say that she has entered the second half of her century. So.
Yes, well, so have I. So.
No, it's funny because I was out looking for a stock pot because I do a lot of my own canning, and I was had to end up resorting to secondhand stores because they were sold out all over the place. And then I see one, and I grab it, and I pick it up, and the woman who had a bit in her 70s, close to 80, looks at me, and she goes, "You're over 50, so you will get a senior citizen's discount." I walked home, and I go, "My first senior citizen discount." Oh, well, welcome to my world. Yeah. But you also have your own blog, a Publis Forum, that you have started up. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, that was what grew out of my friend and I's efforts to get, you know, our information out there wider. Publius Forum, which, you know, Publius is the name that that the founders used to write under when they were creating the Federalist Papers. And I thought it was a good place to start a forum where a lot of different writers could come on and put their stuff up there. And after about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years of doing that, I eventually sort of just made it my own forum and stopped posting all the other guys' work because I had gotten so busy actually doing this for a living that I just didn't have time to put into posting everyone else's stories. So publiusforum.com, P-U-B-L-I-U-S forum, is my own site, and it's been running for, oh boy, it's been running really since 2001.
That's a long run. That is a long
yes.
run. It's up in the link to the forum is up on our show page, and it's also being put back up into our chat room, if I can get my fingers to type right, as well as the link to Breitbart News is also up in there, I believe. Yeah, no, I've got your blog up in there. I don't know half the things I do half the time, so I know what you mean when you get a little bit too busy. You know, there is so much that is in the news lately, and it just seems to be that we are being assaulted left and right from all different things. We've got new stuff coming out about Lois Lerner and the IRS that exploded this morning. There's also now tonight on Fox News, Brett Baer is going to be doing an expose on Benghazi on a book based on 13 hours and three of the contractors that did respond, but they were held up. And now you've got ISIS expanding. You've got Obama out in this conference, you know, spouting really weird stuff. Your heads just start spinning. How do you choose what to write about? There's just so much there.
There is. And this is why a lot of bloggers kind of niche themselves, you know, and specialize in one particular area and don't write much about everything else, because as you say, the news is coming so fast and from every corner of the world that it's really hard to keep up with it. But I have sort of made it my deal to write about just whatever's in the news as opposed to a niche thing. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, I do this for a living now, but I sit here for 18 hours a day looking at the news and listening to talk radio and getting text alerts and tweets and, you know, Facebook alerts, and I do it all day long. You know, you have to, or you end up, if you take a few days off, and the next thing you know, you've missed so much, you don't know where anything's at anymore.
And Annie, I can jump in and talk about how Warner spending 18 hours a day, because from my personal standpoint, you know, doing all the radio shows that I do, and then being the editor in chief of Pundit Press, Warner could probably can tell you too that there are some days that there is so much news and information out there that you actually will go 24/7 or 48 hours, catch a nap here and there, because there's so much stuff coming at you that you just keep going and keep going and keep going because you want to get that information out there. It's almost an addiction.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I did that recently with the Ferguson riots.
Right.
We did a live blog at Breitbart, and I just eyes glued to the TV and to Twitter and to the Twitter accounts, for instance, of a lot of different journalists who were on the scene and getting firsthand information out faster than the regular news can, because I'm there doing it live, and sleep is a luxury for other people apparently.
Exactly.
Which explains why, Dan, you collapsed twice recently. But there is. It seems like it's being, we are being assaulted in so many different directions. I mean, just looking at our problems with Muslim radicals and how this administration has been sweeping everything under the rug and how it's been just snowballing. And it's no longer a snowball. This is a huge avalanche coming right down upon our heads. What's his face? Ben Shapiro wrote an excellent piece in Breitbart about the myth of the tiny radical Muslim minority. And everyone keeps on trying to tell us it's a Muslim minority. But the more the snowballs, the more you find that's not the truth in reality.
Well, one of the problems with this idea that the terrorists are minorities in the Muslim world is the fact that repeatedly we have seen polls of Muslims, of just regular Muslims, in countries all across the world, including Indonesia, where it's supposedly more moderate. And it turns out that they agree with the goals of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Muslims agree with these goals. So they really aren't that radical. They're pretty much mainstream, other than the fact that for a change they're actually acting out on their beliefs, whereas many Muslims just accept those beliefs as true and don't necessarily act out on them. So for me to believe that there's such a thing as a moderate Muslim, it's difficult to believe that.
I really would like to address that one. And Mr. Houston, my name is Cal Fritzy, and I'm Annie and Dan's sidekick. I am in the study of Islam. I have been for a number of years, and I was listening to a radio program. Actually, no, it was on television. I listen to a lot of radio anyway. But Ajam Chowdhury out of the United Kingdom was being interviewed on CNN, and the television host asked him about what's the difference between a moderate and a radical. And Ajam Chowdhury said, there's no such thing. A Muslim is a Muslim. You're either a Muslim or you're not. If you can't be moderate, you can't be a radical, that would be like being kind of pregnant. So I agree with you, Mr. Houston, in what you say, and that if they get the call to stand up, they follow the Quran. If they get the call to stand up and fight the jihad, they will. That smiling neighbor next door might be the one to slit your throat the next day.
Correct. And I'd like to point out that Mr. Chowdhury, a British citizen, just a few days ago was on CNN and asked to do a countdown so that the engineers could hear, you know, get a level on his speech. And he began to count down by saying 1, 2, 3, and then said 9/11, 7/7, 3/11, smirking the whole time. Now,
making
of course,
a joke of it.
Right.
Of terrorist attacks in the West, and he's making a joke of terrorist attacks where thousands of Westerners died. And he thought this was just hilarious. And then when he was called on it, he was said, "Well, if you're gonna take issue with this, it just shows you have no sense of humor, and it shows that you are the one that is overreacting, not me."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I pulled that out about the Muslim cleric about on CNN, and this is the same guy that Sean Hannity has had fun to pull up onto his show, and then, you know, just berate him nonstop. You're just giving him airtime. I'm just wondering why people even bother to give him the airtime, dismiss him as a kook, and expose him for what he is—a radical.
Right. Well,
airtime
as we were saying,
is very important.
Not necessarily that radical.
Yeah, because you were mentioning about Indonesia, and I pulled up the article, and France, you have full 16% of French people have positive attitudes towards ISIS. 27% of them are between the age of 18 and 24. In
right.
Britain, 40% of British Muslims want Sharia law. 20% back the 7/7 bombers. In Palestinian areas, 32% support the brutal murder of 5 Israeli families. Pakistan found that 51% of them grieved for the terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden. Morocco, 68% of Moroccans approved it. Terrorist attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq. That's an amazing number. Jordan, 72% back the terror attacks. Indonesia, 26% back that. Egypt,
right.
65% said they want strict Sharia law in every Islamic country. And the United
now,
States,
let's
13%.
Contrast that. Oh, go ahead. Do the United States. I'm sorry. What was the
13% of American Muslims.
Okay. So yesterday, a friend of mine on one of my sites came after me with, you know, my position on that radical Islam is not really that radical in comparison to other beliefs. He goes, "Well, you know, we have the Westboro Church and Christianity, so what's the difference? These people are very far and few between that belief, that radicalism." And I said, "But listen, these, and you just read these numbers. These people in other countries are sometimes 40, 50, 60% in agreement with radical Islam, whereas in Christianity, the people like Westboro have a 0.0001% support rate. There's no comparison. You can't compare Christianity and its kooks, which absolutely there are some, to radical Islam, because radical Islam is not a teeny percentage of the populace. It is a large percentage of the populace."
And I'll throw this out there when you're doing the comparison for all these folks that want to try to do a comparison between Christianity and Islam. When is the last time that you saw Christians in modern society carrying out a genocide against Christians? When was the last time you saw Christians going out and beheading somebody just simply because they did not think you were Islamic enough? You know, those are the type of comparisons that, you know, people try to draw. But once again, you know, the folks out there that try to make the argument that Islam is a religion of peace, that's a false argument, because, and you'll hear Kale preach this over and over again as well, that Islam is not really a religion. It is a political ideology.
Yes, and that's true, and it always has been a political ideology. It was begun
right.
as a political ideology. The difference between Christianity and Islam as far as dates go is Islam basically became a quote-unquote religion over 100 years after their Savior died, whereas in Christianity
right.
it was within the lifetime of the believers of the period of Jesus Christ living. Whether Jesus Christ lived or not is beside the point. The point is his followers were still alive when Christianity became a thing.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Christ created it, whereas, you know, in Islam, it, like you said, 100 years passed, and that would make it 700 years after Christ was crucified. So I saw a couple of people trying to equate Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Islam stole a lot. A matter of fact, Usama Daduk, who was also on Patriot Radio, what is that one, Kel, that you do? Jihad? I think we lost
Radio Kel. Jihad Network?
Thank you. That was it. That was it. He has a show on there. I picked up his translation of the Quran, and he goes through and says, you know, this is where he's corrupted such and such part of the gospel and such part of the Bible. This is where he contradicts himself. But he actually has a true English translation. And I tell everyone, every American should be reading this book to see exactly what we're facing. It is full of contradictions, and then the extremists are using just certain excerpts to justify what they are doing today.
Right. Well, there's another book out there that's very good, written by a former Muslim. It's called Why I Am Not a Muslim. And he explains a lot of the timeline of Islam and where, you know, where it came in. The writer goes under the pseudonym Ibn Warraq, W-A-R-R-A-Q. And he has a lot of historical information in there and shows how it was far more a political doctrine than a religion. Now, granted, Christianity has been a political doctrine for a long time as well, certainly. But it also has a believer's quality that has nothing at all to do with government, whereas or collectivism, for that matter. It's an individual's religion, whereas Islam is a collective religion that is basically a political doctrine.
Yeah, you said something interesting, because I always get the argument, like, you know, in Christianity, you're teaching that you give. You have to always give. And I said, yeah, but then you got to remember that Christ even said when his feet were being bathed with this expensive oil by this woman of questionable character, and he was chastised by one of his apostles, he said, what is wrong with enjoying? What is wrong with doing something for yourself? You know, Christianity, as you said, is an individual's religion. And if you look at it in truth, it is so in line with conservative values and what our founding fathers had envisioned, a separation between those of us that are practicing our faith and our government, but yet allowing those very principles to influence government. You know, you have the Ten Commandments that all of our laws are based upon. You have respect for life that is written into our laws. You know, Christianity has influence in our laws.
Right. It should also be remembered that the founders did not create a country free of religion. They created a federal government free of religion. They had absolutely no interest in eliminating religion among the states. The whole point of freedom of religion was to make sure that the states and the individual citizen could practice their religion the way they wanted. When Jefferson wrote the Danbury letter, he was actually being prodded by Baptists in Connecticut to come to their aid as president. And he said, well, you know, I really don't have that role. I can't come in there and supersede Connecticut state government practice. The Connecticut Baptists were right. They were being oppressed by the state, but Jefferson said, no, it's not my job to make sure you aren't oppressed by your state. It's my job to make sure that your religion isn't excluded in the federal government. So this separation of church and state is not quite as pat as the left wants people to believe. It's a lot more complicated than just saying, oh, no, the founders wanted no government and religion crossover.
That's where they are completely wrong. And that letter ended up being a Supreme Court ruling, which created the separation of church and state mindset. And that is exactly what he was not doing. You know, it says you are allowed the free expression thereof. You're not to be prohibited against your free expression thereof. And yet you find, you know, kids going to school, and if one child during recess is sitting there reading the Bible, the Bible is taken away from them. If someone walks in wearing a crucifix, you know, they're sent home. If you're wearing an American flag, you're sent home. You know, these things have just, we've allowed the left to control too much of the conversation. We've got to take that conversation back.
And something you can tell your liberal friends out there, listeners, if they're all fired up about, you know, the separation of church and state, by the way, most of these foolish people think it's in the Constitution, which it is not, most of them will cite this thing as a founding principle. Well, ask them why no one paid any attention to the Danbury letter until the 1940s, when it was used by the Supreme Court, as you said, as a basis for a ruling. Not one American anywhere in the history of this country from the day that letter was written and until the 40s when the Supreme Court dredged it up, no one paid any attention to that letter or expected it to be any kind of, quote, founding principle, unquote. Suddenly, in the 40s, when the Supreme Court used it as the basis of their decision, suddenly it became a founding principle when it was ignored for, you know, 75, 80, 90 years before that. So, you know, you got to wonder how it could be a founding principle if no one even knew the letter existed until the 40s.
All right, we got a caller in on the line. He's been waiting patiently. Let me bring him on aboard. Thomas, you're on the air live with our guest, Warner Houston. Go ahead.
Hey, Annie, can you hear me okay?
Got you fine.
I'm hearing a lot
Thomas.
Of background.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of static, too.
Me. Yeah, that's not me.
No, I think it's our friend Dan. Dan, if you
okay.
can... take a look at what you got going on back there. Something's interfering with your phone. Go ahead, Thomas.
Well, Annie, the reason why I'm ticked off is because of, you know, what's going on. And more specifically, I want to speak to the point of those who say that, you know, if you speak nicely to the Muslims, then they'll be nice to you. Or those individuals say, but the moderate Muslims, they're not like the radical Muslims. My question to Mr. Warner is this. When are people going to understand that silence equals complicity? If you're not willing to condemn an act that you say you're not a part of, you're complicit in the allowing of those said terrorist acts to take place. You say you're afraid of your own well-being for your own well-being. Okay, join the U.S. Army or some other military body and fight against it. But rather than that, they sit at home or, as the case in Dearborn, Michigan, where the largest concentration of Muslim population is in our country, They attack Christians, spitting on them, and acting like the radical Muslims that they supposedly came to our country to escape. How do we reconcile that with all the crap that's going on from those savage cowards?
We didn't really accept that I was only following orders or it was out of my hands business when we did the trials after World War II, did we? We didn't say to every last German... a Nazi. You're okay because you really never said out loud that you agreed with Hitler, so you're okay. No, they were all finished. All the leaders, many of the officers, some were even executed because of just following orders. So, you know, it doesn't really hold water.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't.
So what do we do different? Go ahead.
What's that, Thomas?
No, I said, so
Thomas?
What do we do this? Annie, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
We've
got to
expose them
for what they are. Wouldn't you say that, Warner? Expose them for exactly what and who they are, which is what we're trying to do here?
I mean, you know, we have to get around this business of saying that that most Muslims would never do this. We have to really start requiring Muslim groups to speak out against this kind of stuff forcefully and not just, you know, mouth the words. And I don't know, it's really difficult to believe when so many of these groups in the past have said things that we would like them to say and then turned around in their own language and said exactly the opposite. We see that in the Palestinian Authority all the time. they say things to the West that sound mollified and sound nice and sound, you know, civilized. And then in their own language, they go out there and say the exact opposite in their own news reports and their own statements.
That's true. And I'm looking at some of the articles I pulled aside. You know, we've got the James Foley that was recently beheaded, and the father of the jihadi, John, that is suspected of, you know, doing the beheading, his father's sitting in a Manhattan correctional facility awaiting trial for the bombing of two American embassies, killing up 224 people. So instead of, you know, here you got this kid that's a rapper. Oh, it's cool. He's a rapper. You know, he's just trying to express himself. Well, he expressed himself so well that James Foley is now dead.
Right.
And the apple did not fall very far from the tree because the father was one of Bin Laden's closest lieutenants. And yet no one paid attention to him because, oh, they're moderate Muslims. They're just expressing themselves.
But on the other hand, we should not go so far as to say that Islam is completely incompatible with civilization. You could have made that case for Christianity back, you know, in the Crusades era, too. Christianity had been warped into a non-individual's religion. It had been run by the kings and queens and whatnot, and the priest class had made it so that the individual Christian could not read the Bible, you know, because there weren't any for them. And remember, this is one of the things that Martin Luther had railed against. But it changed. It changed sort of back to a believer's religion, an individual's religion. But I don't want to make it sound as if Islam has to be destroyed. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be destroyed, but we have to be realistic in our approach is what we should be, you know, advocating.
You mean like when Obama
to,
said he has no strategy?
Yeah, I want to respond to that. I am an advocate for seeing the illegalization of proselytizing when it comes to Islam. I would like to see the mosques shut down because I think they're recruiting centers. Stephen Sotliff, the second American journalist to be beheaded this week, and Barack Hussein Obama is saying that he will not be intimidated by beheadings. I don't know if he has a strategy up his arm that he is keeping from us, or if and he's going to take a fall in the interim. Pardon me. Or he honestly does not know what he's doing, but there's a third journalist that is being threatened with beheading, and he hails from the U.K. And
okay.
I'm sorry, I'm passing that to Mr. Houston.
Well, I certainly understand the I certainly understand people that that may want to lead toward outlawing Islam, especially in the West. What they do in their own land, of course, is, you know, whatever. But it does run counter to our actual founding principles of freedom of religion in this country. If we were to say, no, you're not allowed to be a Muslim, I'm very uncomfortable going that far. There was a time when I frustrating in a frustrating essay once said it's time to ban Islam, but I don't know. I vacillate back and forth. I really do. But I would prefer to live by our founding principles on that issue, if at all possible.
Well, yeah,
I don't think Islam is compatible. Yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of people that agree with you that it is totally incompatible with anything civilized, and you know, it really is a difficult decision to make.
Yeah, because we do have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion, and
correct.
Looking at some of the stuff, Paulo had sent me something, and I thought I had printed it out, and I did not, where he's been making some speeches up in the New England area and approaching some of the schools with their Muslim outreach program, and he's actually traced some of these individuals back to CARE, to the Muslim Brotherhood, and everything else. It's absolutely amazing, and these schools have these individuals on campus, which you have now another recruiting tool, because, Kelly, you were mentioning about the mosques. But now that you have them entering into our classroom, entering onto the campus.
Oh, absolutely, Annie. The Muslim Student Association is an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are infiltrating the colleges and universities all over the planet. And I interviewed a gentleman who wrote a book about that, and it is a fascinating read. I suggest that everybody get it. And as a matter of fact, I'm just going to reach behind me and grab this book because I have it actually right on my side desk. And this was written by Paul Sutliff. And it's called Stealth Jihad Phase 2, Target American Colleges. And it's all about the Muslim Student Association. Yeah, they're also infiltrating our universities, and they're using them as recruitment centers like they also do in the prison system. So thanks,
yeah.
Annie, for bringing that one up. That's a great one.
Yeah. No, it's amazing because back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, we saw the trend in the prison systems. It actually started in the 50s and just slowly, slowly grew. And I don't know, Warner, if you remember any of this, but they were saying, oh, we're bringing them out. We're teaching them a religion of peace. They're coming out to be better citizens. Instead, they ended up going back into their neighborhoods. Majority of them were black neighborhoods. And then recruiting others and just helping to grow their movement. Hence, you know, you got the Black Panthers, you got the Nation of Islam, and all these things that grew out of the radical fights of the 70s. And here we are now bearing the fruit of it.
Sure, absolutely.
How would you...
And there's definitely a difference between inciting and religion. There is absolutely a line that can be crossed there and that we should be on the lookout for. After all, we didn't let the Mormons course through the West and kill everyone they came across, which they did early in their career, by the way. There was a wagon train from Illinois that came through their territory west of Illinois, and the Mormons killed every single person in there except for the young children, which they forced into Mormonism. So, you know, we sent an army out to them before the Civil War and almost had a miniature war over the issue and before they were cowed and, you know, and forced to stop acting that way. So, you know, there is precedent for doing something about radicalized religion.
Yeah, there definitely is. And this is what I came across, and this is a little bit article that just practically no one picked up on. President Obama has appointed Fatima Noor to be, what is this now? She's going to be the Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, no, no. No.
Yeah, she was
Annie.
University of Memphis Leadership Education and Development Program. She majored in psychology and minors in Spanish and international relations, completed a month-long research fellowship on psychology. Now, catch this, hosted by what is the biggest leftist organization that pretends to be, you know, philanthropic, the Carnegie Mellon. And the second I hear that name, I'm going, oh, my God, what are the progressives up to now? The University of Pittsburgh, she has many honors in the University of Memphis, volunteer work for World Relief, and Tennessee Immigration and Refugee Rights Coalition. Now, Warner, just think back. I believe it was about a year ago that Hillary Clinton negotiated a treaty or some sort of a pact with Saudi Arabia where they vet whoever they decide they want to immigrate to the United States. We no longer do that. We no longer ask, you know, check, do a background check, do a health check, you know, see whether or not they're connected to any terrorist organizations. Saudi Arabia just, you know, red stamps us and says, hey, we say this person's good, so let them in. When
right.
did we give
and,
up
well,
our
I
border
mean, there,
security to Saudi Arabia?
There are also 20-some pages that have never been made public of the 9/11 report that centers on Saudi Arabia's actions during that that incident, that terror attack that killed thousands, and detailing Saudi Arabia's support of al-Qaeda financially and whatnot, and we've never been allowed to see that. So I think Americans deserve to see those 28 pages or whatever it was that is missing from the report that were never made public.
That's true. Absolutely true. And here now Saudi Arabia is complaining about ISIS growing, yet on one hand they supply them, and on the other hand they complain about them. They're talking about
right.
both sides of their mouth.
Well, I think
and
they,
no,
they've
the
got
public
the
tiger
by the tail at this point. It's you know, it's reaching back to start to bite them now.
I've never believed in redaction.
That?
I believe that these reports, they should be public, and that this is the Right to Information Act that we deserve, the redaction. You're right. This is terrible. This is an absolute travesty. We do live in a constitution that protects our First Amendment rights, and Mr. Houston, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Redaction should be banned. It should be an issue. It should be passed on one of the floors, and that it will never happen again because the 9/11 report was so important.
Yes, well, I mean, we're at the point now where we say, and other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you fight the plague? You know, we're definitely in a rock, between a rock and a hard place, and our politicians are certainly not helping the situation. You got to wonder, what exactly are we safe from now after 9/11 and after all this government involvement in our lives? Is anything safe? We've just had a guy sent from Minnesota to Syria and killed there, who was an American citizen, joined ISIS, and here in America, he worked for the airlines. He had a free pass to go anywhere he wanted in the airport in Minnesota, anywhere. So how does that happen?
I'm telling you, he's not the only one. We also had this computer whiz from Boston who's effectively ISIS's social media. Ahmed, I cannot pronounce his name, Abusmera, but
right.
Here's, again, an American born and raised here in the United States. His father is a prominent top doctor in Boston. So radicalization doesn't have to come from the Asian Peninsula. It's being done right here within the United States. As a matter of fact, we have
and
the Englishman.
Britain and France and Germany. It's not just the United States. Well, they're the European nations. Britain has hundreds of its citizens going to fight for ISIS, so it's not just America.
No, also Spain, to say the least.
Right.
Nigel Farage, who's the head of the United Kingdom Independence Fund, UKIP, and he said, England's freedom is under severe threat. We're seeing the abolition of the UK as a nation. And then he turns around and warns us, and he says, the Americans have every right to fear big government because it's the bureaucrats that are allowing this to slip into our society and our government and our laws. How many times do we hear another person calling for Sharia law here in the United States? You've got the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE inside law enforcement, inside the Department of Homeland Security, the CIA, the FBI, and every other alphabet soup you can think of, and influencing how they get trained when they approach someone who they believe to be Muslim. And how they address any Muslim. You know, you have someone that came across the southern border recently carrying an ISIS flag. You had someone doing a selfie in front of the White House wearing the ISIS emblem. You had in Ferguson people there in T-shirts and carrying ISIS flags. It's here. And
yeah,
no
don't forget the don't forget the Twitter note of a photograph of a Chicago building. You know, with an ISIS flag, split screen with an ISIS flag and a warning that, you know, our big cities are being targeted.
Yeah, and Bigfoot put in the chat room something I caught on the news earlier today. Now, being a retired cop, this really got my blood boiling. He decided he wanted to join ISIS. Former law enforcement here, former bodybuilder, and he's on NBC News telling, I forget who the reporter is, that he intends to go over there, quote, for humanitarian aid. Excuse me, that means that guy's going to end up inside the battlefield. And if I were the FBI or the CIA, I'd be knocking on this guy's door right now saying, come on, we've got a one-way ticket for you to Gitmo. What do we do with
that? In the meantime, we have the Department of Homeland Security putting out a threat matrix report that fingers white militias, Tea Party people, and black separatists as the problems facing America, not radical Islam. They don't mention radical Islam even one time in their report, despite all of these homegrown terrorists, despite the fact that the FBI itself has stopped dozens of homegrown terror bomb plots. They don't mention radical Islam once in this threat matrix report. Why is that?
It's because these guys are influencing how we do our stuff. You've got the Muslim extremists already inside our government affecting policy every step of the way. Every step of the way. You know, who do you think wants to take the word God out of the Pledge of Allegiance? It's not a small group of atheists. If they can alter how we handle our own Pledge of Allegiance by removing God, the next step would be to put Allah in. And then you have the numbnuts, the person that I honestly thought could not be outdone as the worst president in the United States, Jimmy Carter, speaking at the Muslim Brotherhood-linked conference this past week. You know, he's speaking there with Keith Ellison, and Ellison claims to be a moderate Muslim, but he's at a Muslim Brotherhood-linked conference. And it was,
Keith Ellison is such a dirty, dirty man.
I don't know who's dirtier, him or Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, good point.
Well, Rahm
Emanuel very
is just good
point.
Old-fashioned crooked.
Yeah.
I think I'd take a dozen Rahm Emanuels over Keith Ellison's. If I had to choose, you know.
At least Rahm Emanuel is crooked because he wants money.
Right.
That's, you know.
Yeah.
Because just recently it was
Huey
revealed.
Huey Long of Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, Obama Chicago.
Came out in today's news. Rahm Emanuel has taken something like about $100,000 worth of contributions from Comcast, who's lobbying to link up with, New York Times?
Time Warner.
Thank you. Time Warner, you're correct. And they will become the largest cable and internet provider should that happen. So now you've got mayors of 70 different cities and towns saying, oh, this is a good deal, and Rahm Emanuel packing his pockets. And each one of these people that are saying that this is such a great, wonderful deal have donations directly to them from Comcast or Comcast employees, including the head of Comcast, who personally gave, I believe, Rahm Emanuel $5,000. I'm doing this off the top of my head, having just read the article a little while ago. But you talk about, you know, something stinks.
Well, and that, you know, that's exactly it. But that's a whole different world there. I mean, that's the typical kind of corruption that we've seen in this country for decades and decades. But the solution to that is not to get rid of lobbying, not to demand that politicians don't take money from this group or that group. The solutions to that problem is to get government out of our lives, get rid of regulations, get rid of influence of the government. The reason that we have these lobbyists who are spending these thousands of dollars to get their way in Washington, D.C., is because they have to, so that the government doesn't come down on them and destroy their living. So it's the government is the problem here, the lobbyists. We've had lobbyists going back to the very first days of this republic. That's what one of the things that is in the Federalist Papers is the fact that people will naturally join together in groups and petition. And the government was set up specifically to allow this sort of thing. So lobbying is not an un-American practice. Too much government in our lives. That's the un-American practice.
Yeah, and if we eliminate a lot of this government, a lot of these regulations, we then lessen the number of lobbyists. It's just a natural progression. You know,
exactly.
You may have lobbyists here for the Boy Scouts because they're not allowed to camp in this, you know, national forest because of, you know, some owl or something up in the tree. Back off. Let the boys be boys. Let the Girl Scouts be Girl Scouts. You know, we don't need all
one of my favorite things about the Obama, the era of Obama was the 3 years that he ran for president initially, he was railing against lobbyists the entire time, saying, claiming that he would never have lobbyists in his administration. And he wasn't in office more than 4.5 minutes before he was hiring lobbyists, before he was creating new opportunities for lobbyists, before he was changing his own supposed rules of the most transparent presidency in history. And so the guy was lying through his teeth since the very second he said all that. He knew he was never going to live up to any of that garbage.
No, and everyone kept on saying, oh, he's the angel of the Democratic Party because he did the address at the convention. And, oh, just give him a chance. He's here for change. But yet no one really stopped to delve into him. No one vetted him truly. You only had just a few of us that were screaming our heads off. You have no idea what you're going to be putting our country through. You haven't read his books. You haven't listened to the sermons he sat in on. You haven't read, any of his other writings. You haven't tried to open up his past where he says he did one thing when in fact he was something else. And I love it when they keep on saying he was the constitutional professor. Huh? Not even close. Not even close. So you had so much misinformation. And when he was running, I said, it's an American Idol president. And that's exactly what we have, a guy who won on a popularity contest. And I just keep on shaking my head every day when I keep on seeing more and more stuff being revealed. Now, Warner, what is the chances of his past ever being fully exposed?
Probably not good. We probably will never get it. I mean, I think we've seen enough to know where he comes from, really, ideologically. So, I don't know. There are so many contradictory things in the guy's life. We know that he paraded around as an African student early in his college career so that he could get, brownie points from the left, and perhaps even free tuition or less tuition fees, fewer tuition fees, things like that. Whether he's really was born in Hawaii or not, at this point, it doesn't even matter. It's too late. The time to worry about that was when he was being elected, not, 8 years later.
And that's, unfortunately, that's a true fact. We're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11, and hardly anyone's talking about all these missing airliners that ISIS has.
The 11 missing planes, yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's funny that it's going to be September 11th and 11 planes. And several of them are Airbuses capable of transatlantic flight. So these guys don't do something randomly like that. It has a meaning. The same way that Benghazi had a direct meaning being done on 9/11 again. And I don't think anyone's really putting up any warning signals on this. And we're just, oh my goodness, today's the 5th? We're 6-7 days away?
Right.
And in 1 week, these guys can transform these planes and change the paint on them very easily, pack them with whatever they want to pack them with, and then fly them again across the ocean to hit whatever major city they want. Now, you were saying that someone tweeted a picture of a building in Chicago holding an ISIS flag. Now, I'm curious to know, how close is that to the Chicago Tower?
Chicago Tower, you mean
Sears
Tower?
Sears Tower, yeah.
It's right downtown. It's the downtown section, everything that in the loop area is within, a 5 or 6 mile radius. All those big, famous, big towers are all right down there. So it's not very far away at all.
No, and no one is really talking about it. I don't see anyone warning people to be on the lookout for anything suspicious. There's no red flags. And everyone's going, oh, it's going on over there. It's across the ocean. It's not coming here to our shores. And I'm afraid. I am honestly very afraid. And I don't know why anyone's not talking about this.
Oh, we are.
It's going on. Well, yeah, people like you and I are, but You know, and we have now with ISIS coming over with this illegal border entry, and I found it ironic that the president of Mexico had them tighten up security on Mexican southern border, but has not tightened the security on his northern border. So he's stopping other than Mexicans from coming into his country, but he's allowing his guys to come still here to the United States. So they're saying that the immigration of these people is starting to slow down, but in the interim, we have God knows how many that have come across. I think you wrote about something like about 66,127 juveniles have been detained. Those are the ones that have been detained.
Right.
That hasn't said those that have slipped through the cracks. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands.
Correct.
Aren't we?
Yes. And a lot of these children, these juveniles, have been shipped all across the country without the states being informed that they're being sent into their areas. We've had several governors. Nathan Deal from Georgia is one. Indiana's governor is another, who have said, hey, we don't want these illegal aliens here, and why aren't you telling us where you're putting them in my state? They've disappeared right into the country. These thousands upon thousands of these kids have been sent all across the country. Some of them have diseases that they brought across the border. And, you know, we have no clue where any of these people are. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they went. We don't know where they're living or how they're living.
We don't know. And I'm glad you mentioned the health issue because at our last Tea Party meeting, one of the guys, you know, approached me and said, hey, my wife is a teacher in the public school system. And she now has X amount of these illegals, you know, in her classroom. And we're finding out from other teachers that every last one of these classrooms in our school district, which comprises of 35 different schools, so it's not a tiny district, just about every classroom has them in there. And now we have to go out and hire interpreters for these kids so that they can learn. And that's an interpreter for every one of these classes that has these kids in there. And my mind is just trying to figure out what we're going to be paying in taxes and what we're going to be paying in health issues, you know, when our kids end up, you know, sick, carrying tuberculosis and whatever else disease that we thought we had wiped off the map that these people are bringing in. And they're not being screened. They're not being screened. And what's coming to a school district near you, now you add in law enforcement and housing. And, in fact, the condo that my mother rents out in Florida to someone had called me and said, listen, we've got threats of illegals coming into our development, and we're going to change the rules of the condominium to make it more difficult for government to take eminent domain. That's the other step we're finding, Warner. In order to house these people, they have to pull the eminent domain, so someone is going to end up losing property they worked hard for, they saved, they use it as an investment. They'll lose their investment once these people move into these places.
Right. Well, we're also losing jobs. We're also losing a lot of jobs to native-born Americans. In effect, especially in government, here in Chicago, for instance, you're being required to be bilingual to get a job in the state government and in Chicago city government, because there are so many illegals that you have to deal with on a daily basis. Well, that's going to cut out an awful lot of regular American citizens from being able to get a job. Because most Americans are not bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most native-born Americans don't speak Spanish, but they aren't going to be allowed to work unless they do.
Well, I can say, knock, 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 habla puerta policía. Does that make me bilingual? Yeah, and the problem of illegal immigration, I've said this before, it's not something new. Back in the mid-70s, I owned a travel agency, and we got hit a couple of times where they went in and they would steal the airline tickets, and they already had the validating machine and the plates to write up airline tickets, and the majority of these tickets were going to South America, to Mexico, to bring illegals in through the airports. And my friend Mike Cutler, he used to work for INS, and he testified before Congress and the Senate multiple times. He said every single state is a border state because every single state has an international airport. So we keep on talking about closing the border, but we've got to screen people when they come over here, and when that, we're not doing that either.
Right.
How do we get that
way? We certainly aren't.
So you had the Boston bombers came by air. How many of the 9/11 bombers came by plane? And you're still having people. Now, I think some of them came across the southern border. Now, prior to 9/11, you may know this because you've been already blogging and stuff, and I could not find the article. I believe it was a year or two prior to 9/11, and I'm not sure if it was Time or Newsweek or one of those magazines, wrote a huge immigration article, and they were talking about OTMs, and they were talking about a lot of them coming from Asia, coming from Pakistan, Yemeni, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. They talked all about that in that article just a few years prior to 9/11, and no one paid attention. And people, I still don't think, are paying attention. They just say, all right, that's the past, we're on the future. Do you feel that?
Yes. Well, I mean, and you also have the problem with the attention span of most people. They get tired of hearing the stories, and if nothing has happened in the interim, they just go, oh, you know, it's all, you're just being a fear monger, and I don't want to hear about it anymore. I have several friends who, as soon as the topic of any kind of politics come up, they simply refuse to even participate. They won't even listen. They walk out of the room. They don't want to hear anything about it. And these people are voting. So you know, we've got a very big problem in that way. To me, it's always a matter of the fact that our school systems have been totally destroyed. We no longer teach why America is great. We no longer teach about America's great citizens. We teach about minorities who had maybe a tiny part of history. We may talk about, and on the other hand, we don't even talk about all of our minorities. For instance, Frederick Douglass is rarely mentioned in school. You know, and we don't teach what this country was built on, the principles of it. It is assumed that all of our principles were lies and incorrect. And people come out of school hating politics, hating history, hating current events, because all they've ever gotten is a barrage of negativity.
That's the God's honest truth. And I end up walking around with a bunch of constitutions and declarations and pocket books in my purse all the time, and I'm always handing them out, because when I talk to people and I says, well, are you aware that's not in the Constitution what you're talking about? They go, what? And I'd hand them one, and I says, you know, take some time, read it, and if you find me wrong, feel free to call me up, knock on my door, and tell me where I'm wrong.
Right.
But you'll find out there's a lot of stuff in there that you're not aware of.
You can take the three-fifths clause as a perfect example of that. The three-fifths clause was an anti-slavery decision, but everyone today assumes it was a pro-slavery decision. They claim that the three-fifths clause did not devalue the human being that was a slave, devalued them to three-fifths of a person. But that was not the purpose of the three-fifths clause. The three-fifths clause actually took power away from the slave powers. See, the slave powers wanted to count each Negro they had enslaved as a full person, so that they could then count that full person as representation in Congress and give themselves more power in Congress. And the northern states said, no, we can't allow that, because all these thousands of people you're claiming as a full citizen can't even vote, so they're not a full citizen. And that's why the three-fifths clause was an anti-slavery move. It was a move to limit the power of the slave states. So it wasn't a pro-slavery idea at all.
Yeah, it was going to force them to say, all right, we want to have them vote, we have to give them full rights. So we were holding a sword over their head saying, well, you can't have it both ways. It's either one
right.
way or the other. You either free them or you lose political power. And in the end, it took a war. It took a war
Correct.
For them to realize that. And there's so much that is not taught. And I'm always amazed at the ignorance of people that are coming out of school, even colleges. Do you ever watch I'm not a big fan of Bill O'Reilly, because sometimes he crosses over that line, I mean, just a little on the liberal side, because he is an independent. But he's got this guy on there, this kid, Jesse Waters, Waters World. And how, and these people are not just a few. These, as you said, are the people that are voting. And I just shake my head. And occasionally you find a gem, someone that knows what's going on. Half of them can't even name the Vice President of the United States.
Right.
I mean, we will march to the gate of hell, Joe Biden.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you know, this is what I love. What's coming out of the White House, what's coming out of the Oval Office between Obama and Biden is not what our military troops are being told. Being told that they're going over there just to guard our American interests, you know, be it an embassy, be it a living compound, they're not allowed to go out and to engage at this point in time. You know, we don't have any
actual... Oh, we did such a great job protecting Benghazi, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned earlier about what's going to be going on Bret Baier tonight, and I'm telling everyone, tune in to Fox News tonight. Even if you hate them, it's important that you see the show because it's with three of the contractors that talk about what happened that day and how they were delayed half an hour and how they were told to stand down, to hold off, to wait three times. And they said that if they had been there half an hour earlier, those men would be alive today. Ambassador Stevens need not die, nor the other brave heroes there that day. And they go through the whole thing, and they wrote a book that's coming out next week called 13 Hours. So I'm telling everyone to please, please watch that and tell other people to watch it. It's going to be fascinating. I caught bits and pieces of it on Bret Baier last night and, again, some of it this morning. And I've got it set in my diva. And that's just something else that's not coming out. And I'm glad this book is coming out prior to the election cycle, too. It's going to put the Obama administration and Hillary in a whole new light. What's your take on this, Warner?
You know, I am all for getting as much information out as possible, but I'll guarantee you that you say the word Benghazi to 99% of Democrats and probably 70 or 80 or even higher percent of independents, and they'll roll their eyes and they'll look at you and go, oh, you're just a partisan, and they don't want to hear it. And it's, I'm afraid that yes, we should get the information out, but if we want to try and base a campaign against Hillary on Benghazi, we're going to lose big time.
You think so?
We can't afford that. We can't afford to lose 2016 to Hillary Clinton. I'm also wondering who her running mate would be. And the voting blocks that they're establishing, no thanks to Barack Hussein Obama. Annie, this frightens me. And Todd, I'm terrified of the idea of her getting in. Or I'm sorry, Warner, Todd,
that
Houston.
We gotta take a 1 minute break so I can try to. I've got to take a 1 minute break so I can try to earn some money here. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Seven Cents is now being sponsored by Audible Books. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of these online books. You know, I don't like, you know, having to download them and sit in front of a computer or my smartphone or something and read. But I checked out Audible, and I was amazed. If you go to audibletrials.com/Southern Cents, you get a 30-day free trial. Now, I tried it out, and I wanted, because you get a free book if you download, and I decided, what book am I going to download? So I thought, what do I not have time to read that I can listen to and be enriched? And I downloaded the Federalist Papers. Now, this is a 3-volume, 9 hours of recording, $30-some-odd value I got for free. So check out audibletrial.com/Southern Cents and download your own free book.
All right, and we're back with Warner, Todd, Houston, and Kel, my co-host. We lost Dan. Dan sent me a text that they had some bad weather coming in Texas, and I guess he had to shut everything down. So hopefully everything's all right with Dan. So we're crossing our fingers. All right. You know, Warner, we were talking about a little bit earlier about illegal immigration. And a friend of mine, he's the head of the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition, sent me this email. And at first I said, oh, this is cute. And I started reading through it and started to think about it, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, this is really, really too true. He has it where it's Mr. Legal and Mr. Illegal. You have two families, Mr. Legal and Mr. Illegal, both have two parents, two children, and live in California. Mr. Legal works in construction, has a Social Security number, and makes $25 an hour with taxes deducted. Mr. Illegal also works in construction, has no Social Security number, gets paid $15 cash under the table. And then he goes on through the progression where Mr. Legal works so many hours per week, where he earns $52,000 a year, now take 30% away for state and federal tax, he comes down to $31,231. Mr. Illegal works 40 hours a week or $31,200 a year and pays no taxes. And the only difference is $31. Mr. Legal pays medical and dental with limited coverage, and then it breaks it down to now he only has $24,000. Mr. Illegal still has $31,200. Mr. Legal makes too much money. He's not eligible for food stamps or welfare. He pays about $500 a month. Now he's down to $18,000 a year approximately. Mr. Illegal has no documented income and is eligible for food stamps, WIC, welfare, and so forth. He still has $31,200. And he goes through this whole thing to the end where the legal guy is now working two jobs and has all these things on his shoulder, where the illegal guy has all these wonderful benefits. I think, is this the truth or not?
It is pretty close to the truth. One of the arguments that people make against illegal immigration is that they don't contribute to the economy, unlike what people that advocate for illegal say. Oh, these people are working and earning money and they're spending money. But the problem is they use three times the amount of social money, Social Security or health care or education or stamps or whatnot, than citizens who are, who are legally here and legally paying taxes. So their net influence is negative, not positive.
And that's the truth. You know, back in the mid-90s, my parents rented out their house up on Long Island, New York. And I wanted to rent it out to a couple of college girls. The dad was going to go in there, fix it up, and he was talking about renting it with the option to buy. And I said, this is a deal, Mom. This is a deal. He's going to give you what more than you want on rent, and you may have the place sold. And you got two decent people sitting in there. So she said, no, this other couple, they have a baby with them. They're from Guatemala. And, you know, I'm going to give it to them, even though they're paying less. And I said, that's not a wise business decision. Why don't you go with the person that's got, you know, where you know what your future is going to be, you're not going to have to worry about anything. Well, it turns out, within a matter of a month or so of them moving in, there were, I think at one point we counted 20 additional mattresses in the place. I had gone in with my partner who had an exterminating business, and he was spraying for cockroaches. Well, by the time they ended up moving out, we had so many broken windows, weird locks on the doors, broken locks, and so much work to do to repair the place. It was a nightmare. And here, finding out later on that they were here illegally, there was something upwards of about 35 people living in the house, all illegal immigrants. They're getting food stamps, welfare, supplemental housing, medical care, and again, being paid off the books, cash. Yeah, I'm someone that saw what was happening firsthand, but everyone's going, no. They're going to add to the economy. I don't see how that happens.
It should be pointed out that a lot of those people were probably not getting any of those benefits. It was their handler that was getting all that money, because often these are criminal enterprises.
Point.
These are people
good
that come
point.
In and they truck in people that are exploited and rarely get the benefit of all these great, wonderful money from the government. They take all the money and pocket it, and then those people get nothing and are sometimes eventually sent back from where they came with empty pockets. So the immigrants themselves are not always getting all these wonderful, these wonderful benefits to themselves. They are being exploited very often.
Warner, I call them the immigration pimps.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, it's not as funny as all that, but it's an amazing. And now they're talking about this one guy that was on Fox News last night. I believe his name was Rosenberg. His son was killed by an illegal immigrant who ran his son over three times. And they're talking about giving driver's licenses. And a driver's license does not mean you're going to be a safe driver.
Nope, it certainly doesn't.
Yeah.
There was a girl, I'm wanting to say she was in Michigan, and I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look it up. But there was a young illegal girl here, got her state-issued driver's license, and then killed two little kids in the street. She was arrested by the police for vehicular homicide, and if she was a regular American citizen, she would have rotted in jail for the rest of her life as a murderess. But because she was on Obama's Dream program, and because she got a license through that, she was let go. She has no jail time, has to pay nothing to nobody, and she's off on her own merry way.
And this is happening time and time again. We're hearing that, you know, they let out something like 600 and something people that were sitting in jail in reference to various different types of crimes associated with murder. And I'm saying these people are now, this is over 600 people that have already participated in some shape or form in a homicide, and you've let them go on the street as if nothing happened.
In many cases, some of these people have been deported in the past for murder or some criminal act, and then just walked right across the border again to commit more.
Exactly, exactly. And, Kelly, you remember a couple of shows ago I dedicated it to a friend of mine, Robert Machadi, and here it was that had been deported several times, and each time they came back in. And this is one of the cases that my friend Mike Cutler was involved in investigating in Brooklyn, New York. And just constantly, it's just like a revolving door. And yet we have our own Sergeant Tamarisi sitting in jail now. How long has this been? Is it 6 or 7 months?
Something like that. I do remember the segment you did 2 weeks ago, though, and that was a tough one to get through. Yeah, what is going on with this soldier being detained in Mexico? This is total insanity. When we look at the immigration policies in the United States compared to those of Mexico, non-Mexicans are not allowed, for example, to own property in certain areas. They are detained. If they're illegals, they are deported immediately. But they allow these people into the United States, Obama's America, and I refer to it as Obama's America. This is not the people of the United States America. This is Obama's America. He's allowing all of these people in. I was listening to a program in that there were 40-year-olds with gray hair enrolling in high school programs saying that they were 14 years old, and the school boards were helpless in preventing this, because this is what Obama has done. He's granted amnesty to all these people. But you try going to Mexico, you take a wrong turn, and you're detained, and they won't let you go. You're in prison. You take a wrong, quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes, and I'm being, you know, being facetious in saying this, but you take a wrong turn and end up in the United States under Obama's America. Welcome. Here's your free home. Here's your welfare. Here's your health and dental, and we're going to get you a voting card.
Yeah, with a nice D right there emblazoned on it there, Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that now when you apply for a passport, they get you to sign up to vote. If you apply for a driver's license or an ID card, they sign you up to vote. Every time you turn around, you sign up for Obamacare, they sign you up to vote.
Yep.
And,
you know, and another large problem with this is Obama and Democrats' policy of allowing hundreds of thousands, millions of illegals to flood across the borders, just so that they can become Democrats, which is really the only reason Democrats are doing this. They don't care about these people. They care about staying in power forever. And if they import 20 million, you know, new voters, they'll never lose, right? That's the whole point. They don't care about people. They care about the votes. But what they're creating is a permanent underclass that will never, ever become middle class. They'll never go from being ultra-poor to being middle class to being perhaps rich,
mm-hmm.
Like the average American, mobility has been in years past. They are creating a permanent underclass that will forever be poor and will forever keep Democrats in office. So it's obvious they don't care about these people because they're essentially building a plantation mentality for these people to live on with government as the overseer.
Exactly. And doesn't the United States you can so back me up on this one, is that doesn't the United States, well, Canada, the UK, we all have experienced this, the generational welfare family, the baby mamas, the absent daddies, and now Barack Hussein Obama is just bringing in the illegals to really, really drain the taxpayers. And Annie can back me up on that one.
There's some people that say, the Democrats wouldn't do this because it's detrimental to the country. It would hurt people. Well, they don't care about the people. They care about their people, which would be the rich people that they're already making rich. You know, your Zuckerbergs and people like that, which are never going to be poor because they have billions. They don't care about anybody under that level. Anybody under multimillionaire is out of their thinking. Those people can go pound sand. And that would be 99% of us.
Yeah. Someone just flashed a news article that there is an unresponsive small plane that lost contact with ground controllers. A flight from Rochester, New York to Naples, Florida, has crashed into the sea off the island of Jamaica. So that's
There was a plane that had breached Cuban airspace earlier. This is probably the plane they're talking about.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, our prayers are with those people. You know, we're talking about the illegal immigration and jobs and stuff, but we recently had that massive protest on fast food places like McDonald's over minimum wage. And if you looked at the crowd, you saw SEIU, Abscam. There was another labor one that had a fist on it that looked like a Black Panther power fist. All these people are trying to get unionized to flip burgers in McDonald's at $15 an hour, which makes absolutely no sense because those jobs should be going to, like, high school kids, you know, for the spring break who will never get $15 an hour. And what's going to happen instead, those jobs are going to disappear. And all this stuff is going to be automated. They already have. I know McDonald's and Burger King have experimented with it where it's totally automated. You go in, you go up to the kiosk, you tell them exactly how you want your burger. It all shoots through these tubes. Your burger is put together mechanically, and you walk away with your truck. It's recruit for unions.
Well, certainly, and that's exactly what it is. This whole movement to unionize fast food workers is just a union move. This is another group that couldn't care less about the workers because the workers in these situations will quickly find, if they get unionized, they will quickly find that they really are not much better off at all. They may end up with a buck or two more an hour, but a lot of these fast food people think they're going to be getting $4 and $5 and $6 an hour, but no, that'll all be taken up by their union in dues. And then the union will say who's allowed to work and who's not allowed to work. And as you said, many of these fast food places will end up mechanizing and cutting out workers. So then they'll have a great, wonderful union to which they are supposed to continue paying dues, even though they're not working, by the way. I don't know if most people understand that. If you belong in a union, you're supposed to always pay your dues, whether you're working or not.
Exactly.
They're going to find that it's not going to benefit them individually, and it will certainly hurt the consumer in the short term. So this is really a silly thing. This whole idea of a minimum wage was never meant to be a living wage. It was never meant to be anything other than an introduction into the workforce. You're not supposed to earn a living on the minimum wage. And one of the things that becomes a problem when you force a minimum wage is that there is no reason for someone to do better at their job. If you get hired in at $5 an hour, you're going to want to work harder so that you can then get $7 an hour, and then harder still so that you can get $8 an hour. But if you're told you're going to make $10 an hour and that's the end of it, you're just going to go, yeah, okay, whatever. And you're never going to put that effort in to your job. That's human nature. That's not just, you know, economics. That's human nature. So the minimum wage really ends up hurting people, not helping anyone.
Exactly, exactly. And what people are, they're all touting, oh, $15 minimum wage. But that's for people not in the food service industry. Because people that are waiters and bartenders, they get paid at a lower scale because they assume you're going to be earning tips, which would make up the difference and bring you up to what the minimum wage is, say, for someone mopping bathrooms. So it's no big helping hand to a lot of these people that are protesting at these food places, these diners, these restaurants, and everything else. They're $15 an hour. The unions are pulling the wool over their eyes simply so they can get members into the union and put a public front over there and get public sympathy. In the end, they're going to find out they're shafted.
That is true. It's all for the union, not for the union worker.
Yeah. Now, you did a lot of reporting on Ferguson over there, and some of the footages I was watching, I noticed a lot of people wearing SEIU and other union shirts over there, too. Were you reporting on that at all?
Oh, of course. I mean, whenever you see these protests, you'll see the people on the fringes who are basically pulling the strings are always wearing those purple shirts and the red shirts, and they have the NOW logo on their, you know, on their shirts, or the SEIU logos. We saw that, I don't know if you recall, but last year, I'm thinking it was, the Google buses were being protested by unions in San Francisco because the buses were going through the neighborhoods and picking up their workers and driving them to, you know, to their Google compound. Apple does this as well. This one video of a guy that was just railing about how he hated these people that were protesting the buses and calling them names and just ripping them to pieces. And it turns out that guy was one of the union people trying to make the Google people look bad by being a jerk. So, you know, these kind of game playing, that's what they do.
That, unfortunately, is the truth. You know, they stir the pot, they get themselves on camera, and unless it's someone that does their research, someone like you, and exposes them for what they are, the public just sees a 15-second, you know, little segment, and that's all that registers with them.
Right,
they
and
don't
they'll never know that that guy with the union shield the whole time.
Right. It's like Kevin Gaffney, when he was attacked up at one of the protest rallies when he was selling the Gadsden flags. Those were SEIU thugs that attacked him, and nothing has ever come out of that case. You don't hear a word about it. Nothing. And actually, I met the guy, too. He's sweet as can be. He is such a nice guy. Yeah. He was traveling with the Tea Party Express one tour, and I had a pleasure of talking with him because we hosted them here in Beaufort, South Carolina one year. But the truth is not being out there by mainstream media. But, Warner, are you finding a lot more people ignoring mainstream media and now going to the Internet, to bloggers like you, for the truth?
Well, certainly. I mean, you can see ABC, CBS, NBC, look at their ratings for their news programs, going falling. CNN, through the floor. MSNBC, even worse. Even Fox News, in some ways, has fallen a little bit in its height of viewers. But these people are going to all sorts of places to look for their news, a lot of them online. And it's definitely we're breaking the stranglehold that the old media has on, you know, on the public.
Well, are there more conservative bloggers out there, like Breitbart and Drudge and stuff, compared to liberal sources?
Well, no, I would say that the liberals probably lead in that. But the one thing that the conservatives have going for them is there are a lot more larger groups now that have pulled resources and gathered together writers like Breitbart and like The Blaze and Daily Caller and the effort that the Heritage Foundation just began, the Daily Signal, in their investigative reporting. There's a lot more of that going on than there ever was before. I would have to say, though, that the smaller bloggers, the, you know, the mom-and-pop guys, are sort of beginning to fall by the wayside a little bit more. But the right is doing pretty well in at least building its audience. But the left has been doing it for far longer, and they have a lot more money dedicated to it.
All right, because Dan, he has Pundit Press, which is a pretty damn good site. I've contributed to it a couple of times. When I want to find something, I usually hit the Blaze, Breitbart. I'd slip over to Pundit Press, Drudge, and I'd go for those sources. But what you have to find, I'm also finding, is that there are some of these other bloggers that will just take rumors and build a story around it. And that's what we've got to be very careful of, because I think we're going to come underneath a huge microscope if we end up putting anything out on one of the reputable sites that was taken off of one of theirs. And that's where the thin line, I think, has to be walked. You finding that also?
Well, and certainly conservative news people are going to be held to a higher standard than leftists. Leftists all day long can put out innuendo and rumor and build up stories, the false stories on these premises, and they're never going to be denigrated or called out on it. The right will call them out on it. The record will be corrected, but it'll just that'll be the end of that. On the other hand, if you're a conservative and you base a story on something that ends up being egregiously wrong, you are destroyed. You will be kicked out of whoever you're writing with. You'll never be hired again by anybody else. You know, you might as well start studying bricklaying, because you're definitely not going to be you're not going to be allowed to be a journalist. So we on the right better be sure of our stories. We just absolutely must be sure of what we're writing.
That's the truth. That is the God's honest truth. Now, just to change the subject a little bit to get everyone else's blood starting to boil once again, something else came out about the IRS emails. And Lois Lerner ignored political expenditures by unions, and then she deliberately targeted the Tea Party. But there's something now that popped out today. There is an attorney by the name of Mr. Strelka, I think I'm pronouncing that right, that somehow he was the person that let slip that the Tea Party people were going to be the center of their focus in discriminating against who gets 501c3 or C4s. The attorney for a lot of the Tea Party groups that are suing said she spoke directly to him, and he let her know that they were targeting Tea Party and conservative groups. Now, he was working in Washington, D.C., directly below Lois Lerner, when the Congress wanted to do their investigation and called him, you know, to come forward. He seemed to have kept on getting disappeared. He was shuffled from job to job. At one point, he was in Department of Justice. Another point, he was on the presidential staff, and then back to the Department of Justice, and then off now somewhere else. And the DOJ announced that they will be defending him, even though he no longer works for the DOJ. Do I smell rotting fish here?
Well, of course. And don't forget, this is a precedent, especially with this administration. Remember the Fast and Furious FBI agents who had arranged for guns to be illegally purchased and then shipped to kill Mexican citizens and then brought back into the United States, one of which killed an American border agent. And these guys weren't fired, these people that created this program, they weren't fired. They were just shuffled off to new jobs. One of them was actually essentially given a raise and a better position. So, you know, this is how they handle things in this administration. If you're caught doing something illegal or something illicit or something just plain immoral, you're given a raise. It's a resume enhancer.
Yeah, now, you were talking about Fast and Furious. There was that guy, I think his last name was Merkel. At one point, he was the acting head of the ATF. And then he went behind closed doors on July 4th. I believe this was 2 years ago. I may have that right or wrong. To Congress and gave secret testimony, and none of which has ever come forward. Where is that going?
Well, and that's certainly another investigation that sort of petered out, just like our Benghazi investigation and our IRS investigation and every other investigation of wrongdoing by this president and his flunkies. They do it with impunity. They know that nothing's ever going to come of it. They stare down any reports about it. They deny and say it never happened, and then later maybe begrudgingly admit that it happened and then just move on and say it's an old story.
And that seems to be the way they do it. And whenever they have us focusing on something in specific, they then go and raise another crisis. Say, oh, no, we've got to look over here. Forget about over there. That's not a real crisis. This is a real crisis. Now we've got the president over there in talking about the Ukraine, talking about NATO, and then ignoring what is going on now. No one's talking about ISIS in Mosul anymore or the beheading of thousands upon thousands of Christians. And what I'm finding is that some of these churches here in the United States are finally speaking up. I got a letter from my pastor recently talking about that, looking for people to support them. But we've been wildly quiet about the genocide over there.
Yeah, and by the time it does become any kind of story, it'll be an old story and nobody will care anymore. And the media won't highlight it, neither will the academics. On that level, just today I published a story on Publius Forum, how the National Association of Political Scientists had their big Labor Day meeting get-together that they have every year, and they had over 1,000 panels, 1,000 different panels discussing the history of politics and whatnot. And in that 1,000 panels, they had not one single panel on the presidency of Barack Obama. But they had plenty of panels ripping up George W. Bush still. Now, that's because these people are complicit in hiding what Obama's doing. These people are all leftists in academia in their ivory towers. They think Obama's great, but they know he's a failure, so they wanted to avoid having to talk about him amongst each other. So they had no panels on a man that's been president now elect twice into his second term, halfway into his second term merely. And they had not one panel on his monumental failures as president, not one. That's because they're covering for him.
Unfortunately, that is the truth. That is the God's honest truth. And, you know, even in our mainstream media, I opened up our local paper, and buried on the second to last page, they have NATO pledges $19 million for the Ukraine. And you've got Putin just laughing at the limp wrist response from this administration. You know, he's running shotgun over these guys, and there's a whole section between Russia through the Crimea that goes straight to the sea, gives him a second port, which is what his plan is, and eventually, you know, the total subjugation of the Ukraine. Now, my husband's family, it was from Latvia, and my husband's 65. He says, I may be too old, but if I have to, I'll pick up a gun, I'll go back to Latvia and fight for them. They are really, really frightened over there. Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland.
Well, they should be. They should be frightened. This Putin is following the Nazi playbook of divide and conquer, just take, you know, blitzkrieg. He's doing exactly what Hitler did in many cases. Certainly, I'm not going to say that Putin is Hitler, because Hitler was such an egregious nutcase that no one is Hitler. Hitler was Hitler. But he's following that playbook. He's following that military playbook. And for anyone in Europe to deny that that Putin is simply launching one of the first European wars for what, since World War II, you know, in 60, 70 years, he's launching a war in Europe on his say-so with no cause whatsoever. And if you deny that, then you're just being a fool.
Yeah, and some of the military actions is traced directly back to a specific general that is one of Putin's henchmen. You know, he was a general in the Russian army, and now he's over there with the rebels. And they're saying that a lot of these rebels are actually the Russian shock troops.
Of course.
But again, mainstream media is turning their back on this. So here we go, another ceasefire, and we'll see how long it goes. It's just a delay tactic for Putin, because then he can pull his next stunt within a matter of, by tonight or tomorrow, and then gain sympathy for his side.
And our wonderful president is certainly out Chamberlaining Chamberlain with all of his don't worry about it, you know, we have peace in our times, really, type of foreign policy, if you want to even call it a policy. It's just haplessness.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering if he's going to be hitting a golf course while he's over in Wales. You think?
Well,
is that a possibility?
He probably will, but maybe not.
Hey,
it's hard
probably
to say, but it doesn't matter. He's done it enough over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's another article that ended up in the back of the paper that no one's talking about. Al-Qaeda leader creates a new branch. They are now going to be in India. The announcement by Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri brought new signs of increased security in India, even after the government ordered the states to be on alert. So Al-Qaeda is spreading out into India, and next will follow ISIS. They want to take that whole entire area. They want all of the Asian area to be theirs. That's the start of their world caliphate, and no one's doing anything about it. Listen, we're coming up to our last 9 or 10 minutes. Warner, are you having any plans for anything new, like a book coming out or something, with all your wonderful knowledge that you've gathered over this last 2 decades?
No, well, you know, I've considered a book, but no, I don't have anything coming out. I've been so busy writing for Breitbart and my other sites that I just haven't had time for something like that. But definitely, people, go to publiusforum.com, P-U-B-L-I-U-S forum, F-O-R-U-M.com, and certainly look me up on Breitbart. And just type my name, all three names, Warner, Todd Houston, H-U-S-T-O-N, into any search engine, and you'll get thousands of hits. I've been writing since 2001, so I have thousands of stuff out there. I'm mentioned in dozens of books, I've been around.
Warner, it was an honor to speak with you. It was an honor. And Annie, you always have the best and the brightest on the Southern Sense's conservative sense. And Annie invites me on to sit with her. And speaking with the people that she interviews is a real a pleasure for me, a real treat. I learned so much being here. And but believe me, sir, will not be too long before I'm probably seeking you out myself. Thank you, Warner.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I had fun. Well, I don't know if it was fun. Boy, we sure stirred up some woeful topics, but it definitely was necessary.
Absolutely.
Well, it's always necessary to get the truth out there, and that's what we strive to do. So, Warner, I want to thank you very, very much, and I'll be talking to you, and we'll have you come back again.
Great.
All right. Warner Todd Houston up on Breitbart News, breitbartnews.com, and publisforum.com. There are links in the chat room, and there's a link on the show page. And I hope that everyone goes and checks him out. And he's rather prolific in his writing, as one of your favorite words, Kel.
prolific. I love that.
We got some great people coming up in the future. On Tuesday, we're going to have Jennifer Parrish, and she is fighting the unionization of our children's daycare and home health care for children. She's got a fantastic website. There's a link on the show page for Tuesday to that. Colin Flaherty, come back. He's going to be with us on Friday. And then there is a group out there that has been doing this since, I believe, 2001. There is a Veterans Canine Corps called VetDogs.org, and they help veterans with service dogs, and it's extremely, extremely interesting. They're based on Long Island, New York, but they have a presence in just about all the 50 states. And then we have a new upcoming artist, Ed Vintage. He's actually from Germany. He's got a new CD out, and I've got the CD over here, and it's called Ed Vintage Highway Hymns and Outlaw Anthems. So he'll be calling in from Germany, and we'll be playing his music and talking to him. He belongs to a group in Germany that is the equivalent of our Tea Party, so it'll be very, very interesting to talk to him. And I'm waiting on a response from Usama Daduk. He should be coming on after that on the 23rd. I'm just waiting for a confirmation. And then at the end of the month, I'm going to have Congressman Mark Sanford on. So we got our schedule lined up, just a couple of days left open, and we're going to be rocking and rolling throughout the whole month. So I hope everyone stays with us and listens and tells everyone else to pop over and catch us here. So, Cal, we had a blast. Unfortunately, we lost Dan because there's a storm going on where he lives in Texas, and we'll hope that he's safe. So I can understand
it's
when that lightning comes
same. It's been the same around here. We've had thunderstorms for the last week or so, and people are literally being struck by lightning bolts. So people, please be careful out there. When you see the bolt revolt into the home, like it's bad. It's really bad everywhere, Annie. And when you hear thunder, take cover down under. Like really. Don't get off the golf course. But, you know, the one person that can stay on the golf course when there's a lightning storm. Hi, Barrick. How you doing, baby?
And I just noticed that on our show page, I misspelled Breitbart News. I apologize for that. I have a little bit dyslexic. I have a tendency to switch letters around. But if I change the spelling, it's going to change the link, so I'm leaving it. So forgive me. It's a little mea culpa. Agridor has put out a couple of links up in the chat room to your show yesterday, Kel, that he joined you on. And Agridor has his 20-minute show that he had on. He put that up in the chat room. Kel, do you have a show tonight?
I do. I will be doing the RFB Friday show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Michael Green will be joining me in the second hour. I'm going to be speaking about the issues of Islam, and, of course, you can find me on Blog Talk Radio, but you can also find me at Pundit Press and Agador, the F-bomb show. Yeah, that's what it's nicknamed, the Friday show. This is where I fly solo, and I'm left up to my own nefarious devices, and nobody's keeping an eye on me. I don't have a Dave Milner. I don't have Tim Burton. I'm left to my own incorrigible devices, Annie.
Oh, occasionally I drop by, and after a couple of scotches, I'll help you with it. But
hey,
I have to see what's going on tonight. I got to see what's going on tonight. My husband was popping by the office looking like, I've got to tell you something. So I think we may be in for trouble. I may have to pop out later on. But I want to thank everyone for listening
I love it.
I want to thank everyone for listening in. And remember, you can catch us on Pundit Press, Kinetic Hi-Fi, The Fix FM out of Charleston, South Carolina, Patriot Radio Network, TeaPartyCommunity.com. If you're pissed off with Facebook, go over to TeaPartyCommunity.com, join up, and tell Tim Self, D, Senior, and Junior, I sent you there, as well as Ghost Fighter Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. We will be back on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat station. So have a safe, healthy weekend. Good night, and God bless.
Good night, Annie.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. What you see, I'll tell the truth, every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud, American.